Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
We just had a bolt of lightning that came through and turned off everything, and the power was gone and no internet, and it's back up, so I'm thankful.
We are having them install 5G, and we have had the transformers popping and all kind of stuff going on, so I know. It's awful being without electricity. You just feel like you're stripped of everything.
I know, and I walk into a room, and I know that it's off, and I automatically flip the switch, so
I'm just
ruined without it.
Well, you're not ruined. You are here with me. I'm trying to find my postcard. I can't find my postcard, but Brains, I want you to know who our guest is today. Right there. Right there, the beautiful Kathy Lee Phillips. She is from down south, and she's going to talk to us about her books. She's an amazing author, and she is a woman with an incredible story. So help me welcome her to the edge, Kathy Lee Phillips. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me on today's show.
I'm so glad to have you. I want to hear all about your story. Tell my brains a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a Southern girl, and I have learned more and more every day how not everybody grew up in the rural South in the 60s and 70s. And I know yesterday when we were talking, don't feel bad because you didn't understand what the word slop was. And for us—
And I'll tell you, let me interject real quick. Let me tell you why. Because growing up, my father did not allow pork in the house. There was—
Okay.
Pork. So I didn't know. And I had seen a pig one time and the cotton picking thing chased me. I'm scared to death. So yeah, I'm a little bit ignorant to that. But
yeah, I wouldn't want that either. But it's also a matter of how you grew up, where you grew up, and all of those things, which we need to take into consideration more often than we do. And I have a lot of people say, "What is that word?" And I say, "Slop is a word for a food that you throw away, that you didn't eat, that somebody else needs, you know, to rake in the garbage can and let it go." And it can go— it used to, it can't anymore because of laws, but it used to go to farms where they fed their pigs that slop. And
okay, so let me just kind of get an idea, because my father, you know, would say, you know, a pig will eat anything. So he wasn't, you know, and religious beliefs, he didn't believe in that. But slop is like leftover corn or mashed potatoes.
That's right.
Whatever's left, they just get a smorgasbord of stuff.
Right. And they love it. They have no complaints. They don't pass anything up. And it's fun to watch, because if you're easily entertained, and when you live on a farm, you usually are, if you're easily entertained, you can watch those pigs just go crazy. And they'll slurp and snort and run to
all
the
kind of stuff.
Yeah. They act like pigs, you know. And I was just amazed when we started all this, I guess I was 12 or so, that as we watched the pigs eat the slop away from the bottom of their trough, things began to glisten in the sunlight. And I thought, what in the world is that? My father told me to get down and see what it was. And it was silver left over from the slop that had come to us from the Noonan House restaurant. Mm-hmm. Now, Noonan is the town I grew up in. And at that time, that restaurant was the restaurant to go to. We didn't have Ruby Tuesdays, McDonald's, or anything else like that. And that restaurant was wonderful. So a lot of people ate off that silverware. And I picked it up from the trough. I took it home. We washed it and soaked it, washed it, soaked it. But for some reason, the manager of the hotel didn't want that back. He said, "Oh, please, you just keep that. You know, you just keep it." So by the end of the summer, we had a full serving for six. plus serving pieces.
Oh, wow.
So I wrote that story not long after my husband died. He died after a heart transplant. He did receive a heart and lived for 20 months. And we had not been married nearly long enough. And he died suddenly one night from a blood clot. And in my grief, I was trying to say, God, where are you? What do you have to say to me? And I started writing this story about pig slop. And I truly thought I was losing my mind. Mm. And finally, as things do, if you listen and discern what God's having to tell you, he was trying to tell me, Kathy, there's good in this situation that you think is all bad and you think your life is over and there's nothing but grief and depression left. You have good days ahead of you. I was only 35 when he died. Oh, wow. And so I just thought, everybody else that was widowed was twice my age easily. And I didn't know who to talk to or how to talk to. And I really learned that nobody is really that interested in your grief. Mm. They want you to be the same person that you've been because they don't know what to say to you.
I just lost my mother. And sometimes misery loves company. They want to draw you in. I've got a couple people that have just, when they hear my voice, their voice inflection goes down. Oh, how are you? My mother's death did not bury me. It raised me. Mm-hmm. So I get it. I get what you're saying, that there is definitely, you know, a silver lining. There can be a silver lining if you allow it.
Right. And those of us that have certain beliefs, I believe in God. I believe that there is life after this one. I believe that I will be with my husband, Jerry, again. Mm-hmm. And this is a temporary separation. Now, most people get separated for 5 or 6 years. I've been separated for 30 years already.
Let me ask you a question. You never wanted to, you can never replace Jerry. I understand that. No. But you never wanted to marry again?
I didn't rule it out. It just hasn't happened. The most I've dated one man is from about a year and a half. And one day I just thought, I don't like this. This is not what I want to do. He doesn't like my dog. He doesn't read my writing. We don't have anything in common. So I said, just go. Tell people you broke up with me, whatever it takes, but just go.
Wow. Go ahead with yourself. Well, you're... You know your mind, you know what you want, and that's the important thing.
I do know my mind, and if it happens again, I mean, I'm in my 60s now, and I think, you know, surely I'm going to die next week because I never expected to reach 60, and I'm just amazed at how fast it happened. Mm-hmm. But if somebody comes along and wants me and my dog Hartley, then, okay, we've got a deal. And he needs to be able to read my books and not fall asleep. Be a compassionate, wonderful, loving man.
So tell me a little bit about, before we get into the actual books, tell me a little bit about your writing process. You know, because I'm an author and inspiration hits me. You know, it'll wake me up in the middle of the night. You know, I'll be sitting on the throne. And I have a little tablet right by the bathroom. And you just have to write. What is your writing process? What is your inspiration? Because you're the author of what? How many books now?
4 books.
Wow.
Soon to be 5. I'm like you. It's when inspiration hits. I can hear a child say something or hear a sentence on TV or read something in a book and it will spark something in me and I just have to go write about it. I do not set specific writing hours every day. And, you know, I would probably get a lot more done if I did that. But I actually am more into it when I feel that spark of the divine and I want to go after it and see where it leads me.
Right, because you know what, you want to be in that moment, and mm-hmm. it should be a journey. It should be an experience for the writer as well as the reader, not just, you know, on automatic.
Right. The same goes because I do speaking as well, like you do, and I was never going to do that. I just thought there's no way I will speak in front of people and have them look at me. I'm just not going to do that. So I finally started getting invitations to speak and more, and I did it. And I love it now. I love it now because I look at those people in that audience as potential family,
right?
As potential friends, as people that will be great to get to know. And if they're not, you know, we don't have to stay around with them. But if I've got something to share that is a universal experience, I can talk to women about menopause and loving chocolate, and they are in the palm of my hand.
Oh, I know. And you're funny, too. You can make them laugh. Tell us a little bit about your books and what's in the premise of your books and your characters.
Each one has a premise. Now, this is Silver in the Slop, and I don't know if you can get a good picture.
Okay, and then put it, there you go.
A good picture of it. It's got that pig on the front, and people look at the title and go, what in the world is that? And when I talk to them a little bit about it, they're intrigued, so they want to find it. So some of these stories are where I found Silver in the Slop, and you know, found a good lesson. And I always finish up with a Bible verse and something so people can study more if they
you
like.
Do you have a main character that travels with you during each book?
No, I don't. I have fictional characters only when the stories are real. But sometimes I have to fictionalize the characters because you don't know really how people are going to feel if you write about them. So my main fictional character is a girl called Raylinda Dupree. Now, that is a very Southern name, and she is someone who just mean as the devil, quite frankly. And she enjoyed being...
I think I just hung up from talking to her on the phone a few minutes
ago. Yep, she enjoys it, and she's based on somebody I know, but you just never know when those people are going to show up. And Raylinda appears off and on in some of the stories that I have, and people will say when I'm at a retreat speaking, don't you have a Raylinda story you can share with us? And I'll have to think, yeah, I think I do. So Raylinda is in there. My second book is called Gutsy Little Flowers. Now, most people think it says cutesy, but it's gutsy because I don't know if you have daffodils out where you are.
Mm-hmm.
April, but yes. These bloom here in Georgia January and February before the winter is over. And I love that. I love that in that flower. They bloom in the wintertime. They are a bulb that's down beneath the cold, hard ground, asleep. And suddenly the voice of creation says, wake up, it's your time to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And against all odds, they come and they open up and they come through the hard earth and they start shining. Sometimes they bloom in snow and there's a little green stem, and then before it's all over there's a big huge yellow flower. It's like a school bus yellow flower.
It's beautiful. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's
beautiful.
We give daffodils here during cancer awareness months, and so we do that, and the daffodil is the flower for that.
Oh, that's great. I never knew that so many people thought about that flower. It was just a little flower growing along the driveway of our farm when I was growing up, and I always knew when I saw those, winter is just about over, and we had a wood heater in our to heat our entire house. We had to go out and cut wood and bring it home. I did not like winter. And when I saw those flowers, I couldn't help but smile because I knew spring was coming. And so I write about people that are going through winter experiences in their lives, you know, tough times and how they come out of it. And that's what this book is about. Now, the third book is called... This is the best selling that I have.
There you go.
Yeah. It's called Aging, Ailments, and Attitudes. And I didn't want a box of Dentacream or a Walker on the front. I said, I want a swinging granny. And that's what they gave me. And to show that you, and she's got her hands loose from the ropes, and she's got her shoes off, and her toenails are painted fuchsia.
Wow.
So she's showing that she can enjoy life no matter what season she is in.
Are your books illustrated? Do they have pictures inside?
No, they do not.
Okay. So just, how did you work with a designer to create the covers of your book?
I worked, first of all, when I started doing this, there wasn't but one company, and they were way out in Nebraska, who worked and did this. And so I worked with them for the first three covers to get what I wanted. And I got more confident as I went in telling them what I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, color her up and all that. So these are a lot more colorful than the first book that I did. But now
The pig in the slop, the silver in the slop, that's a pretty cute one.
Yep, but it's basically two colors. It's the silver and black and pink.
Okay. You know?
But when they sent me a cover back, I was like, okay, whatever. I didn't know. I was just learning myself.
Right.
And John Dewey was an educator who said he wants to learn by doing, and that is what I have done. Now, the fourth book that I have is called Honey, There's a Cat in the Freezer.
Okay, pull that one up a little bit over to the other side. There you go. Pull it back a little bit.
It's a strange title, I know, but I had a friend do this illustration for me because this is based on an actual story. My husband and I, he had family that lived on a farm near the University of Georgia. And we would go down and visit. And one time we did. Now, they were a lot more serious farmers than we were. They were out in the middle of nowhere. And people put all of their unwanted animals, cats, dogs, out on this lady's road. And she brought them in and she cared for them. Her sister was a veterinarian. So they took good care of the animals. And they just had tons. I mean, they probably had 60 or 70 cats at one time. But she had a favorite one named Jesse. And Jesse went to his great maker one night, and it was in the middle of the wintertime. And she was about 70 years old. Her name was Sarah. She did not want to go out in the cold, hard ground, frozen, and dig a grave for her pet Jesse. So she wrapped him up in aluminum foil and she put him in the freezer. Now, I understand there's a lot of people that have to do this, you know, in the north where the
slow down. You say there's a lot of people that have to do it. I don't know if there's a lot of people. Is there a lot of people?
I've heard that people in the north have to wait sometimes until spring when the ground thaws and you can dig a grave. Mm. Now think, let's bring it back home to the COVID crisis. You know, when people were having the COVID crisis and they were having to store bodies if they wanted a funeral for later on.
Right.
So that's what she was basically doing. She was storing her cat, Jesse, until the thaw in the spring and she could get out there and dig a grave for him. Well, I didn't know anything about that. And my husband and I were there one time and she said, before you go, let me give you some steaks. We've just, you know.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God.
Killed some cows and done, you know, that. This is farm life. And she was going through the freezer and she was moving things around to find what she wanted to give us. And she picked up this thing that was absolutely huge and placed it down. And Sarah was kind of a strange one. And I whispered to Jerry, I said, is that a small child? It's not a small child, is it? And Jerry said, I don't know. He said, Sarah, what is that big package? She said, that's just Jesse. You remember my pet Jesse that died? I'm just waiting until the spring thaws so I can dig him a grave. And I remember leaning up to Jerry and whispering in his ear, honey, there is a cat in the freezer. And so I wrote that, and I talk about God's timing and how sometimes it's just not ours, but we have to trust anyway. And there've been a lot of times when I haven't trusted, and I'm just waiting to see what God is going to do. And the money is running out, or the problem is taking me down, or whatever, but he's never failed to be there.
Never fail. And he will never fail. And, you know, again, when you're short, sometimes it's a learning process that builds your faith.
Right.
That really builds your faith. So what is the fifth book going to be about?
It's going to be Silver in the Slop, Second Serving. Because that book was went over so well. It's going to have a different cover. It's going to have two pigs on it. And, you know, it's got a lot of better stories, because some of these stories I wrote when I was 16, 18 years old. And that's what I did to start off. But my writing is improving as I'm growing. And that's the way it should be. And
so what are you doing to, because I want to encourage people that are writing. And these are, you know, they're autobiographical, but they're a little fictional because you're using fictional characters. What are you doing to improve your writing skills? Are you taking courses? Are you working with a coach? Are you doing some things online? Are you reading more? What are you doing to really enhance your ability to be a great author?
I am lucky in that I had in the 11th grade a teacher, Miss Clowers, at Noonan High School, who was the best grammar teacher on God's green earth. And I remember everything that she taught me because she was such a good teacher. Now, I got into things like, you know, words, English, stuff like that. I didn't get into math or numbers, but she was teaching, and it was so good to remember. And I do that, and I take notes, and I have books that have to do with what you do if you get yourself in a really tricky grammar situation and how you punctuate. And it's always a little scary to do that. So sometimes you just rewrite the sentence and do something simple like that. I have taken courses in community courses out in, you know, the public area and things like that. And I've enjoyed that, but I've never had any professional training for,
Do you work with an editor though?
I work with a lot of editors when not my books. I'm editing and get another a friend editor to help me do those. I work with,
I'm sorry, you get another friend to help edit your books.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's one thing. Now, you know, I am a wonderful writer and I'm writing my fourth book actually right now, but I am not a grammaticist. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I put stuff in the wrong place. And I also had a reading challenge growing up. I was a little bit dyslexic. And so I still, you know, at this age, I still suffer with that sometimes. And I'm not ashamed of it. Everybody is not it.
No, everybody's.
But you know what's the worst? The grammar police. Did you know that you didn't put a comma in this? And I'm like, yeah. And, you know, do you know that you don't know how to balance your checkbook? You know, yeah. So everybody falls short of the glory somewhere. But when you're in print, it's so important to have someone, you know, dot those I's and cross those T's, because people are really looking for you and the grammar police are out there enforcing it.
Well, and I'm probably on the grammar police, you know, a sub member of the team, because it can drive me crazy too, but I can't see everything. But when I'm getting ready to put a book together, I get, you know, probably 10 or 15 people and I say, you read for spelling, you read for grammar, and you read for the story and how it flows, and does it tell a story, and is there anything I need to make clearer? Mm-hmm. So I want editing done in all of those ways. Mm-hmm. Now, when I work with magazines, their editors are more the type of get this in on this deadline, right, and have right. this many words to it. And, you know, they're that way. They haven't changed too much over the years of the things that I've written. I've written for Guidepost, Today's Christian Woman, Women of Faith, just a lot of different things. I even wrote for a Bible. Zondervan published a Bible designed for single women. Those that were widowed are never married or divorced. And they asked me to write some devotionals for that. And they had to be like 375 words, including scripture and a prayer. And it had to be precise. Right. And it was that was tricky to do. But I actually wrote for a Bible. That really blows my mind.
That's a blessing right there, you know.
Yeah, for the farm girl from Georgia, yeah.
You will, good. So what would you tell a 25-year-old Kathy Lee Phillips about life?
Oh, boy. I would love to tell me, don't take everything so seriously, because I have problems with depression and anxiety. Those are genetic things that have come to me. And genetics is a crapshoot. You don't know what you're going to get. So if I take things too seriously, I get very stressed, and then I can get very depressed. And I don't want to do that. So that's one of the things I would have told me. I would have said, trust in God more. Hold on to a few of those verses that really speak to you and tell you that God is exclamation point. Hold on to that. Be careful who you choose as your friends. Not all of your, you might start out with a lot of friends, but you might not end up with a lot of friends.
Amen, sister.
So
that word friend is a big word.
It's true. And I've learned that sometimes if a friend drops out during part of your journey, maybe you weren't supposed to be that friend's friend at that time.
Right. I mean, everything has an expiration date.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cat in the freezer. And sometimes you got to thaw it out and throw it out.
Yeah. And throw
That's
it out.
To say that experience that you had with that individual is not valuable. And it's not powerful, like the one particular character that you have in your stories.
Yeah.
You know, you still befriended that person because you've got all this stuff to document. But mm-hmm. It's work.
It is work. And it tears up your emotions and, you know, makes you just want to lash out sometimes. So you just have to say, don't take this so seriously. Life is serious, but you're not going to get out of it alive. And you better keep laughing. Because that will help you cure a lot of your ills. It really will.
So, Kathy, what do you want to be your legacy as this accomplished author, as this woman of faith, as a, you know, a farm girl from down south? What do you want to be remembered as?
Somebody who was authentic to me. I'm not afraid to be vulnerable. If I have to get a story across that involves some pain for me in order for somebody to learn something, I'm willing to do that. I'm very willing to do that. I want people to know that my life is a video. It's not a snapshot of certain things along the way. If we remember, you know, what that aunt did then or what my mother did that time and stuff like that, those are individual snapshots, and life is growth, and they can grow so much from that point. And the video continues, the snapshot just stays put.
Well, it is your legacy. It is, you know, it's who you are, it's who God made us to be, and we are here to evolve. We're ever changing, you know, and that's what makes us special, and that's what makes us unique.
Mm-hmm.
So many people want to be a carbon copy of somebody else, or mirror their success, or have the same hairstyle. You know, you see a lot of people who want to mimic these celebrities. I work in the world of celebrity, honey, and I tell you, there is very few, very few with all of their money and prestige and travel and all that I would want their life ever.
No, you know? It's so hard enough
Yeah, they can't go to the grocery store. They can't, you know, go to the amusement park with their kids. Yeah, the paparazzi is always after them. The IRS is always after them. So, you know, you got to be careful what you ask for.
Right.
And be content in your own journey. So I appreciate what you're saying. Absolutely.
I always wanted to write. I didn't want, you know, paparazzi or anything like that going with it. I think overall, I would like my legacy to be scratched and dented, a scratch and dent person. I have sitting at my feet a beautiful King Charles Cavalier Spaniel, who is, those are high dollar dogs. I couldn't afford this dog in a million years. I got him because the breeder for these dogs called me and said, I have a scratch and dent dog. I was like, what does that mean? She said, this dog has a heart murmur. He is not perfect. I cannot sell him. I cannot show him. I want him to have a good home. He's a beautiful dog, and he is. And she gave me this Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I mean, they're gorgeous. And I called him Hartley. It was after my husband died, so it's spelled H-E-A-R-T, and my last name, my maiden name was Lee, so it's spelled H-E-A-R-T-L-E-E. Aww. I think he has the most perfect name in the world for him. But she said, now he's what we call a scratch and dent dog. He's not perfect, but there's still a lot of love left in this dog. I am not perfect. I got scratches and dents all over the place, and I'm going to have more. I don't want to be perfect. I couldn't stand the pressure of whatever that means. I want to be remembered as the scratch and dent who still loved people. That didn't stop me from loving.
And people love you, and they love your writing. And I'm so glad that you've been here with me on The Edge, Kathy Lee Phillips, to share your story. And your, please tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want to purchase a copy of your book.
Okay, brains, it's good to know you. The easiest way to contact me is by email, Kathy@KathyLeePhillips.com. Spell that Kathy with the C, please. Kathy@KathyLeePhillips.com. Tell me what books you're interested in, and I will get back to you, and we'll work it out, and you'll get a book in the mail pretty soon. I have a P.O. box that orders can go to, P.O. Box 308, Newnan, N-E-W-N-A-N, Georgia, 30264. Now, those are the two easiest ways. You can Google me. There's some ways they'll get in touch through Google, and I will have a website live and active pretty soon. It's being reconstructed now. It will be simply KathyLeePhillips.com.
Brains, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to support Kathy, okay? Because she's right. Let me ask you another question, though. The genre of the book, is there a particular age appropriation?
You know, that's a funny question, because there are 8-year-olds that read this book.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
The most requested story that I have to tell when I'm speaking is The Bra of My Dreams, and it's the story of my first bra. And I tell that story a lot for Mother's Day events when they bring their children, mm-hmm. because I talk about wanting a bra but not needing one, and how I went to school and I raised my hand to answer a question and the bra goes like this.
Oh my gosh.
And it was humiliating. And I'll be vulnerable enough to tell that story. But these little girls that sit down in front of me on the floor are just in hog heaven because some adult is talking about bras, you know, and they're interested in those things. And there's some other stories that might not be suitable for everybody. I'd tell the parents to read the book first, but, you know, in the Silver in the Slot book, those are things that I wrote very early, so those are pretty safe. But just read it.
Safe is not reality, okay?
No.
And it has to be what it is, and you're a down-home girl, And I know that you're going to give it to us 110%. Thank you so much, Kathy, for being here on the Edge with me and my brains.
My pleasure.
And we value you. And we're going to keep posted. And you know what? Maybe I can whisper in your ear and get a signed copy of the book. And maybe, you know, give a coffee mug and give that to one of my brains so that they can hear it. I'd love for someone on the other side of the world to be able to understand what slop really is.
I would too. Everybody faces slop of some kind.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Yeah. So
again, You are a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you. And I'm going to put all your information down when the next book comes out. Let me know. We're going to run this interview over and over again. And keep writing and keep doing what you're doing. And I just love you. Just, you're warm and fuzzy, like a nice pair of slippers.
Well, thank you, ma'am. So are you.
Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Please handle your business. Please be nice. Like, love, share. Leave some comments for me and Kathy, because we want to give you the best that we have to offer anyway. All right. Bye, brains. Have a great day. Bye, Kathy.
Goodbye.